Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. It's good to be back in the studio after a few weeks away. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. On this Monday, though, Nevada is in the headlines for becoming the first state to pass a marijuana drug testing law. This is an employment-related law. The political junkie Ken Rudin joins us from the Washington, D.C. area. We'll start the conversation there. Hello, Ken. Good to talk to you again.
Beth, I'm so excited that you're back that my internet went down. My phone is out, and I'm on a cell phone.
You're blowing out the technology. Is that it?
I think the hamster's died, and all your electricity is not working. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I think we're changing it up a bit because we were talking a lot about abortion laws when I left. We're going to be talking about the presidential debates in a moment, but I want to start with this very interesting decision by the Nevada legislature and a law that went to the governor's desk. The Democratic governor signed it. So let's talk about this and what happens in the workplace now if you fail a drug test because pot is in your system.
That's great. It's the first state in the country. The governor has signed it. This is, remember, not only a Democratic legislature, but an all-female legislature, which I don't know if that plays into it here, but it is still a significant law that you can fail the drug test based on marijuana in your system, not heavier drugs. But, you know, if pot is the reason you're failing a drug test, you could not be disqualified from a job unless you're like a firefighter or somebody, or a doctor or somebody who has to drive a vehicle for a living. But this is still significant. And given the fact that more and more state legislatures are becoming more and more conservative with more and more conservative laws being passed, this is an interesting switch from that dynamic.
I think you just gave Nevada credit for having an all-female legislature, which perhaps they hope to have. They have a female majority legislature right now.
Did I say all-female?
Yes, you did.
Well,
yeah.
You know something? I think I said it correctly, but my cell phone made it sound wrong.
Oh, that's right.
Happened.
A technology glitch. You are right.
Yeah.
It is EMTs, firefighters, people who drive vehicles, however, that are at issue here. And employees have the right under this law to challenge the results of an initial drug screening if it happens within 30 days of hiring. So I said it's the first state. The New York City Council, I believe, has passed a similar law.
That's true.
With recreational marijuana being approved in increasing states' numbers across the country, these are the kind of laws I think employers are going to be looking at.
Well, you know something, we could talk about the pot law, but I think I want to talk a little bit more, if we have time, about the Nevada legislature itself, because since Governor Sisolak was sworn in, he was elected in 2018, he has already signed 500 laws by the Democratic majority state legislature on everything from gun show loopholes to more money for schools to a health care bill that has pre-existing conditions to a $12 increase in the minimum wage to $12 an hour. There's a more liberal abortion law. So, you know, we always talk about everything that's coming out of Washington and Congress. And, of course, we know that nothing comes out of Congress anymore. And the action may be in the states. So while, of course, you know, a lot of states are more and more conservative, we did see Democratic wins in 2018. And there's no more of an indication of how that's changed than in Nevada.
So just as a footnote here, Nevadans did legalize recreational use of marijuana 2 years ago in 2016.
Right.
Let's stay with Nevada then for a little bit and talk about their poll on the presidential race. This, too, is very interesting, Ken.
Well, I think it is, too, because throughout, you know, whenever you talk about polls, you know, I mean, of course, polls are really early. I mean, a poll this time in 2015 had, I think, Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, you know, like 53-40. So, of course, you know, we're talking about a year and a half before the general election, let alone 8 months before the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary, but still I think it says something. And the fact is that for the most part, we do know that Joe Biden has been leading in almost every Democratic poll. I think he has been leading in every one, but the person thought to be the main challenger to Joe Biden has been Bernie Sanders in all the polls. And yet in nationally and in Iowa, and now we see last week in Nevada, that Elizabeth Warren, who's been, remember, she was dismissed for the longest time, she was, you know, as Donald Trump would say, she was Pocahontas. She was mocked by many Republicans. There were some things in her commercials and her campaign events that seemed inauthentic. But she has been giving more detailed policy speeches than probably any candidate I can see or I could think of in this race. And, of course, as you know, there are a lot of candidates. But Elizabeth Warren in the Nevada poll, the last I saw, Joe Biden's, you know, 36, which is, you know, usually the case. Elizabeth Warren, 19, Bernie Sanders, 13. Hmm. Now, there are two things I get out of that. One, Elizabeth Warren seems to be gaining as a possible alternative to the establishment frontrunner, Joe Biden. And, of course, Joe Biden's numbers certainly could go down, as they have been going down in Iowa, even though he's still leading. But what's also interesting is Kamala Harris. I mean, I thought that she would be doing well in Nevada because it's mm-hmm. right next to California, and Nevadans know her, and yet she's only 6%. So I don't know if it says something about the weakness of the Kamala Harris candidacy or she's just not catching on. Also, one more thing quickly is that Nevada, you know, one of the top four states, the early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, Nevada has a high percentage of Latino voters,
right.
And one would think that might help Julian Castro, and yet the only Latino in the race, and yet Castro is at like 1%. So Nevada, again, we have a long way to go, but a lot of interesting headlines coming out of that poll.
So voters are going to have to wait to see a head-to-head between Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, because next week's first Democratic presidential debate is in two parts on two different nights, and Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren are not in the same group on each stage.
But I still think that people want to see Biden versus Bernie. And the reason I say that is because Bernie Sanders has been unhesitatingly critical of Joe Biden on the campaign stump, talking about corporate money and establishment and all that. So it's interesting. The first debate, which will be on Wednesday the 26th, I won't say it's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, because that's a stupid thing to say, but it is Elizabeth Warren and, shall we say, candidates who are, you know, not as prominent in the polls, like Amy Klobuchar and Beto O'Rourke and Cory Booker and Tulsi Gabbard and people like that. Whereas the Thursday night debate, not only is it Biden, but it's Buttigieg, and it's Kirsten Gillibrand, it's Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders. So look, strange things have happened in debates. People who were supposed to do really well collapsed. Think of Rick Perry. Think of Jeb Bush. Think of Donald Trump, who came from, you know, from almost a total ridicule to dominating the Republican field in his debates. So my eyes will be glued. It's not like it's one good night and one bad night. It'll be fascinating. But Elizabeth Warren will not have a chance to mix it up with the so-called big boys, the Bidens and the Bernies.
These debates will start at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, so 6 p.m. here in the West. And this was purely a lottery drawing to figure out which 10 candidates are joined together on each night, correct?
That's correct. Unlike the Republicans 4 years ago, they had a kids' table, like George Pataki and Bobby Jindal, the former governor of Louisiana. Lesser-known candidates, lesser polling candidates, had their little debate that very few people watched. And all the major candidates, John Kasich, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Donald Trump, you know, all those guys. And they were all guys, except for Kelly Fiorina. But she was also at the kids' table for a while, too. But this is a very interesting, dynamic, diverse field. You have six women. As a matter of fact, three women in each debate on the 26th and on the 27th. There's a lot to watch. And you know, I don't think we should go into that debate with any preconceived notions, because things could, look, you could say the wrong thing and you'll be remembered for that for the rest of your career.
Three candidates were excluded because they didn't meet the criteria, and there are interviews with each of them. But again, I'll just say that the two California candidates, Kamala Harris and Eric Swalwell, will be together on that second night. Do you think that second night then is going to be a better debate with Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and a number of other names in it?
Well, it's the heavyweight championship fight. I mean, that's what everybody wants to see, especially because Biden and Bernie, I'm only saying it because of the B&B, but Biden and Sanders are the, for the most part, thought to be the top two Democratic candidates, plus the fact that Sanders relatives going after Biden in attack speeches and things like that. So people will be like the gladiators. People will be looking for blood. But it's also, there are two different Democratic parties. One of them is Joe Biden, whose argument is, I can beat Donald Trump and I can reach out to Republicans. And there's a Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing that says, look, the only way to beat him is not to be a centrist candidate, is to be true progressive, more radical ideas that will excite the base. And so we'll see what happens in those debates.
I'm talking with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. There are two more topics I want to cover. Ken, I'm going to give you your pick of which you want to talk about first. There's a different Sanders in the headline, Sarah Sanders, making a move. You can address that. Or let's talk, too, about President Trump, based on polling, making an interesting decision himself. So go for whichever you want first.
Well, I'll talk quickly, because I never talk quickly, right, on your show. But Sarah Sanders, I saw a headline that says she's stepping down, and I didn't know what she was stepping down from, because I don't know what she does. I mean, I know she's the White House press secretary, and I know she's supposed to have daily press briefings, but she hasn't done that in like 90 days, or 100 days even. So the fact is that Sarah Sanders doesn't love the press. The press doesn't love Sarah Sanders. She's leaving those daily briefings when they have them. They're pretty toxic and ugly. And look, every press secretary, Democrat or Republican, is not going to always tell the truth. They're there to defend the president. But for the most part, the feeling with Sarah Sanders would just either make things up or just get into a fight and not come close to speaking the truth. So there are not too many. There are not many reporters who are sad to see Sanders go. What's interesting about Donald Trump, though, he just got rid of several of his polling firms because Donald Trump always says, I'm doing great in every poll. I'm winning everywhere, winning. And yet his internal polls showed him, at least against Joe Biden, losing in Ohio, in Minnesota, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia. So Trump, rather than improve his standing, he fires the pollsters. And we're back to hearing that, the only polls that count, these are old polls. They don't matter anymore, and he is really winning everywhere. But I think there should be some Trump campaign workers who are nervous that he has not picked up any support from his election in 2016, and the fact that he's losing ground in some of those key states that he won against Hillary Clinton back in 2016.
Ken, you know what this conversation tells me? That here we are. It's begun. This kicks it all off. We have a debate coming up. We're going to be in the thick of it, and you have to get your internet fixed.
yes, it's true because I have to watch my game shows and my Jeopardy to see if that guy is still winning. Oh, wait, he lost, didn't he?
If you're going to make a point crystal clear to us, we have to hear you in a crystal clear way. So, yeah.
I'm sorry about that. I apologize for that.
Yeah, get back to Jeopardy. No, that's all right. It's always great to talk to you.
Unless you invite me out there in person, it'd be much better. It'd be clear. You could see me in the flesh.
Oh, okay. Let us know if you're going to move here. That would I'd be very interested.
Okay, I have to hang up now because I'm gonna start packing.
There you go. Take care. That is Ken Rudin. He is the political junkie. We'll post a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.